SBS Radio.
Welcome, Olivia, to the program, first of all. Back at the beginning of last month, you were awarded a public service medal as part of the Queen's birthday honour list. First of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
How does it feel to be recognised nationally for something which, I mean, can I call it sort of your life's work, your life's calling?
I have to be honest, it was quite a humbling experience. It's one of those things that you sort of don't expect, you know, you just do your job and you do it because you love what you're doing. You might do some extra things, but you sort of don't see how other people value it until something like that happens. So I must admit, it was a very humbling experience to have so many people reach out and say, well done. You know, I think most of the time I just say thank you and look down, which is a bit embarrassing.
What exactly was a part of that? What was the award exactly for?
So the award covered a number of different areas. Some of it covered the work that I do each day at the Defence Science and Technology Group. And so that covered some work that I did on some lasers, some work I did on these systems that detect missiles and warn pilots that there's missiles coming towards them. It covered work that I did on novel technologies as well. And obviously these things are not done by an individual, they're teams of people. So I've had really great people that have worked with me on these things. And then the other thing that they also covered is a lot of the work that I've done with students and trying to encourage all sorts of students into what we call STEM, which is science, technology, engineering and mathematics. So as a physicist myself, I knew what drove me to, you know, that area. And, you know, I can say that even after all these years, I just love, you know, physics and I love what I do.
We're definitely going to touch on that in just a bit, but I feel like it's important to point out, you know, there are some real household names on this year's honours list. Hugh Jackman is on there and Ida Buttrose is on there. But what really caught my attention was your last name. Is it safe to say that that's got a Balkan connection there?
Maybe I'll give you a bit of a family history. So I was actually born in the country that was called Yugoslavia so you can probably guess how long ago I was born.
I think our audience is very well familiar.
my parents were Catholic, which would have made them Croatian, but they lived in the Serbian part of Yugoslavia. So I was actually born in a city called Novi Sad, but my parents lived in a little village called Novi Slunkerman. I don't know if you've heard of those.
Novi Sad, definitely I have, because I was born there as well. But when you left Serbia as a child, I'm assuming that you grew up in a household where English was the second language that was spoken.
It was. And so when my parents immigrated to Australia, I was only three. At the age of three was when I started speaking two languages. But my parents, even today, my mum, she still will speak. She sort of speaks to me in a half local version and a half Australian version, and sometimes I speak the same way. So, kad ja govorim do nju, ja nekad govorim ovako, a nekad govorim engleski.
Da budem iskrena, ponekad i ja isto tako. što verovatno neke ljude može da nervira, ali meni je to uvek bolje da i mešamo, ali da ipak ne zaboravimo ni jedan ni drugi jezik.
Yes, exactly. So I just answered in English.
But yeah, that's it. That's fine. I'm going to ask the next part in English as well. Coming from a migrant background, do you think that in a way maybe motivated you more when it came to your studies and your career?
Look, I'll say one thing, and that is when I grew up, even though my parents, so people think that if you come out and you do a PhD, you become a doctor of something, that you've had academic parents. And my parents were not like that. My dad was a shoemaker. He did when he was in the Yugoslavia, he did an apprenticeship as a shoemaker, and they came over under that, you know, under his sort of trade. And my mum, she was working as a seamstress. So they weren't, you know, highfalutin academics. But one thing my parents did teach me, and I'm sure that there's lots of parents that are from overseas are like that, and is that mathematics was really important. But the great thing was I loved maths. I just loved maths. So for me, it was an easy thing to do because I already liked it. But the fact that my parents valued it and said how important it was stuck in my head.
Yeah, well, I think my parents tried to teach me the same, but they didn't really succeed there. But you're going off that very much as well. I mean, the reason your name probably stuck out to me is because those of us that are raised, you know, away from the roots and the heritage of our family often look for similarities of between us and people that are sort of being represented on a bigger scale. So by default, I'm sure people that scrolled through that list were really searching for someone that maybe had a similar name to them or a similar profession to them. How do you feel about being a role model in this sense to, you know, second generation Yugoslavians, Balkan migrants in general?
Oh, look, so it's a funny thing. I don't specifically see myself as a role model. I think that every person on this planet is a role model. And so if you live your life in the right way, and you can, everybody can be a role model. And I think we sort of say, oh, this person is or that person is, but really it, you demonstrate that those behaviours that people want to emulate, and that whether that is your, how far you succeed in science or in academia, or whether it's about just what sort of a human being you are, you know. And I think sometimes we value these academic achievements, but sometimes we forget about you know, just being a good, like, world citizen, right? So I'm happy to be, if that's what people see me as, I'm happy to be a role model to, you know, our young budding scientists, right? And our young budding immigrant scientists. I wish we could get more, more people into it. Look, I'm always happy to talk to somebody if they're interested in going on into physics or into a STEM career, because we really need those people. They're the ones that are our future.
Going off young budding scientists, you started the South Australian Space School in 1997, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
How did that come about?
So when I was a student at school, when I was in grade five, you know, the thing that got me into physics, that made me decide I want to be a physicist, was a teacher that actually did a session on space sciences. So he did stuff about our solar system. He did stuff about, you know, the launches to the moon, and you know, and so in that class, he completely engaged us in that area. So even then, I knew what sort of scientist that I wanted to be. You know, I didn't know it was called a physicist until later, but that inspired me to get into physics. Now, I ended up doing my PhD in something called atomic physics, in the area of atomic physics. However, the thing that got me to even look at it was that sort of love of space. And so when I was sitting on the Australian Institute of Physics committee, it sort of occurred to me, we were sort of talking about the how we didn't have enough students doing physics and enough students coming into STEM. And I remembered the thing that got me excited. And we had a teacher that was on the committee at the time that sort of talked about a space school that they'd started running interstate. And when we looked at it, I found out that we could run a similar program here in South Australia. We sort of had the Air Force Base we could take them to. We had my own work location that we could take them to. And then we had all the different universities as well that we could approach. And so I worked with this teacher from a college here called Hamilton Secondary College, who you might know because they've just started an actual Mars. They've got a new Mars environment there at their school that they opened a couple of years ago. But it was Mike Roach and myself that sort of originally started that, with two other teachers, John Hisco and Sue Koshel. And together we started that to try and inspire students into STEM.
And do you think you have inspired students into STEM with that school?
Well, I know that we have, but and I'll maybe I can give you a bit of information. So in 2017, we had a really big event here, which we had thousands of delegates come to. It was called the International Astronautical Conference, and it was held here in Adelaide at the Convention Centre. And there was, I'm trying to remember how many, whether it was 12 or 17 astronauts they had from the European Space Agency.
Wow.
And from NASA that came out for that. Elon Musk came and gave a talk at that conference, and it was like watching a rock star get up on stage. So with the people that lined up to get in to see his talk. So that was a really big event. And at that conference, we presented a paper which was a 20-year longitudinal study of the impact that the Space School has had on students' career choices and subject choices. And in that, it showed that it was pretty close to 80% of the students that attended Space School either chose to, of the ones surveyed, I should say, that responded to the survey, chose to stay in a STEM field or to chose their subjects based on their experiences at Space School. So I know that it works.
Yeah, so it definitely achieved what it set out to do. What do you think the future of STEM industries is looking like now? Is it a workplace that is diverse, that's inclusive, or do you think that there needs to be more work in terms of that?
Look, I think, you know, I think sometimes people ask that question and they don't understand or value diversity. They don't understand why it's important. And if you actually look at the major companies that are doing really well, they've got the most diverse sort of workforces. In STEM, we've still got quite a long battle to fight to get those numbers. So in some STEM areas, we're better represented, you know, so in some of, in like biology and in some of the sort of more human aspects. But in other areas like physics and engineering, we don't have a very good gender representation for you know, women. And for example, even at my own work, you know, I lead a team of approximately, you know, 30 scientists and engineers, but they're a completely male team. So I know that we've got a long way to go, but I also know that people have now started to value the what women bring to the workforce and also value that sort of diversity so that, you know, if we're, you know, if you want to go further, you go with more ideas, more different ideas, you know, because what you need is more different areas of thought, so to get further.
Yeah, and a diverse workforce will definitely propel any industry into diversifying the output. In your personal journey to the position where you are now, like you said, you're leading a team of scientists. What kind of challenges did you come across along the way?
Yeah, so that there's all sorts of challenges that you sometimes, you know, often people focus on the technical challenges, and so we do that because we are scientists. So we go, okay, here's a problem. How do we crack this problem, right? But there's so many other issues along the way, and I think sometimes people forget that we are all people, and we, you know, there's this new saying of bring your whole self to work. We come from different backgrounds. We come from different, you know, thought sets. And for you to function as a human, you know, a proper functioning human being where you're contributing, you've got to look at all aspects that, you know, how you develop your people, what you teach them and what you, how you lead them, how do you inspire them to great things? Because that is the mark of truly great leadership, is being able to inspire your people to achieve great things. It's not about you, it's about all of you, all of them and you.
What would you say is the proudest moment of your career?
That's a really hard question, but yeah, I'm going to try. It's not going to be what you think it is, because most people would think it's when you actually receive something or get acknowledged. But for me, it was something slightly different. So a few years ago, I think maybe it was even 10 years ago, I got I was one of the finalists for an award in South Australia that was called the Unsung Heroes of SA Science. And it's an award that is giving out during National Science Week, and it's about four people that are doing stuff, you know, trying to promote STEM, but where you know, their efforts may not have been acknowledged in some formal way, so they maybe there's no award in their category. And so I was one of three finalists that made it that year, and I didn't get their award that year, but there was something that happened at that event. It was a breakfast event where they did the presentation that was so much better. I had three young women come up to me and say, and they were not related, they didn't come from the same area, they were all individuals that happened to be there, and that each of them said either I stayed in science STEM because of you, hearing you speak, or I stayed, I went into science communication because I heard you speak. And at that point, I think I had been doing all of these STEM outreach activities for well more than a decade. It was quite a bit more than a decade, and I had no idea if it made any difference at all. And when I when they said that to me, that was better than any award that I ever could have gotten, because I realised that it meant that I had gotten them to this place where they were going to have a really enriching and valuable career, and they were going to contribute to something and feel like they'd made a difference. Right? So that was, I know it doesn't sound like the right thing, but that's the thing.
It's a cycle, like you even mentioned yourself. There was a teacher that, you know, once upon a time inspired you to keep pushing and be, get to where you are now, and you returning that is must be a wonderful feeling. What's the best piece of advice that you could give young women in STEM, but maybe more so, let's even just say young people that are in high school? You know, maths is hard in year seven. And you're 8 and you're 9, I can attest to that. I stopped along the way, you know, different things pulled me in a different direction. But for those kids that are, you know, in those waters and they want to push on further, what sort of a message that you would like to give to them, or that you most commonly share with your younger peers?
Look, I think the message for everybody is this: don't give up. Don't listen to people who tell you can't do that. I heard that so many times, and I will sort of mention our young women, because they often hear it more often than our young males, because often the message we give them culturally is that science is for boys, and it's not. Science is for everybody. Every time you step out of your house or you turn on a light, you turn on your TV, everything there is based on some science that somebody has done at some point in time. So your whole world, the reason you've got your smartphones that actually track where you're going, the reason you have the World Wide Web, that was physicists that used that invented that, right? So all of there's technology that touches your life, and that's scientists that do that. So everybody's got the ability to do it. It's just about applying yourself and putting effort in. And I'll say one other important thing is that you can do anybody can do any job. You know, you can come into work. You can actually be a checkout chick. And I did do that, by the way, when I was a student. Right?
I think we've all had some interesting jobs in our lives.
We have.
Yep, I've been a keen pizza server. So we've got to start.
You got to start somewhere. My best job was in a chocolate shop. So
that sounds understandable.
Look, you can do those jobs, and you can go into work each day. And if that is your prime source of income, then you're going to have to go in every day, and you're going to have to do that same job. In science, what I do, if I get bored with what I'm doing, I literally think of a new idea, and I just get somebody to give me. It's going to sound terrible saying that, but get somebody to fund me to do my next lot of research. And I've been surprisingly successful at that. And what it means is that I'm always doing something new. I'm never bored, and I always have, you know, I always feel like I'm making a big contribution to something. There's lots and lots of opportunities, but just don't give up. That's what I was going to say. Don't let anybody tell you can't do it is the main thing, because you know you better than they do. And there will always be people that doubt you, but the one person that you need to listen to is yourself, and to know that you can achieve it.
I think that's a very, very fair piece of advice. Thank you, Olivia, for inspiring us on the program today, because I think we all really do need a bit of a lift every now and again. So thank you for coming on.
No, thank you.
Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.